Hello and welcome to Drinking the Kool-Aid. This is a comedy podcast dedicated to the mysterious. My name is Cassidy.
My name's Amanda.
And we are here drinking White Russians.
We are.
My stomach is rumbling from one sip.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, rumbling and you're tumbling.
I think it's because I don't know what it was all day today. I was hungry, but I didn't want to eat anything.
Couldn't be me.
Like, I opened my fridge so many times, and there's so many things I like in there. There was easy things. There was
You weren't like,
look at these things.
Three boxes of pizza in my fridge. Let me just pop into one of those.
And it all sounded good, but like I didn't want any of it for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. And then when you were like Taco Bell, I was like, I almost said no. And then I was like, no, I need to eat something.
Yeah.
And so I ate the Taco Bell. But yeah, I don't know what it was. I was like, oh, I should make this like soup. I got this Calabrian chili dumplings, tomato dumpling soup that from Trader Joe's, which is my favorite. And it's in stock right now. It's like one of those seasonal things. And so I got a bunch of it last time I went to Trader Joe's. And so I was like, oh, I should have one of these. And then I was like, no, you have to save it because it's going to go out of stock. Geez. You know, it's that dumb brain thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But so, yeah, I think between the Taco Bell and a couple sips of this White Russian, my body's like, thank you for giving me calories.
Yeah, well, the rumbling is really your tummy going, thank you.
Thanks, Mom. Yeah.
Do you know what today is?
Today is Leo full moon.
Yes. And?
Our anniversary.
Our 10-year Californiaversary.
Happy anniversary. I love you. When are we going to our fancy dinner?
I don't know. Whenever.
We've been talking about it for so long.
I know. I need a gown.
You do need a gown. Well, if it makes you feel any better, none of my gowns will zip up over my boobs. So.
Okay. So then we'll wait until.
You could probably wear one of my gowns because the problem is.
The boobage.
The boobs.
Yeah. You're right. I probably could.
Yeah. So feel free.
You have a plethora.
I feel like the blue one would look cute on you because you love sleeves.
I do. And I love a off-the-shoulder moment. That's like my absolute favorite.
You can wear it off-the-shoulder or on. Yeah. It's very cute. Yeah. I feel like we could get that for you.
Wow. You just have anything my heart desires.
Yeah. I mean, don't worry. There's other gowns that I can pop on. I'm just saying I have a gown for you also if needed. If need be.
If need be when we go to our fancy gown dinner.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Know what would be fun if we were ever, like, really, had enough money to rent a Taco Bell?
Ugh.
Like, us eating Taco Bell in gowns.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, how celebrities do after, they'll go to, like, the Oscars, and then they'll go eat In-N-Out in their little suits.
Well, you know, we can go get married in a Taco Bell cantina.
I already tried to offer that to you, and you went and married a man.
Yeah, I fucked up, huh?
Mm-hmm. Were you even thinking about me with that decision?
No, I guess not. You were my maid of honor.
I was.
So maybe I thought about you a little.
At least a little. That's true. I'll take that. I'll take what I can get.
That's right. That was really our wedding. Just no one knew.
Well, I mean, based on the pictures, they knew.
when we were reading our vows and I immediately turned my head all the way to you and just started reciting them to your face. That's when they knew.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I'd guess maybe it was probably the cradling, the soft touches, too. Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
But yes, welcome to... Oh, speaking of celebrating things, I did just want to say...
Uh-oh.
Why uh-oh? I said celebrating.
Oh. Yay!
Yay! I just wanted to say happy 20th birthday to Caitlin Roberts.
Hello!
She is one of our listeners and messaged me and was like, it would literally be so awesome if you could shout it out. It's my 20th birthday. I'm leaving my teens.
Oh my gosh! You're 20!
Happy birthday, Caitlin.
Happy birthday, Caitlin. Okay, can I give a birthday shout out?
Yeah.
Groovy Stroovy.
We love Groovy Stroovy.
It's his birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Good week for people with cool birthdays.
Yeah.
What sign is this?
Pisces?
Hey, Siri. What sign is the birthday February 4th?
The answer I found is Aquarius.
It's Aquarius?
Aquarius.
The age of Aquarius.
Are you proud of me for knowing that?
I am, actually, yeah.
Thank you.
Also, I don't... really think it's fair that Siri just gets to make like an appearance in our episodes.
I know. Are we going to have to like start crediting her as a co-host?
Yeah. I mean, she is at this point.
We get a letter from Apple and they're like, we demand a 1/3 split of your profits. And we're like, it's mostly debt. So
that's so true.
Do you want to help chip in for merch, Siri?
Yeah. Apple, why don't you pay off our debt? Stupid bitch.
Come on, man. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Amanda just popped a zit in
my
mirror.
God, stop. Why are you telling everybody?
Because I wanted to talk about my zit.
Oh, okay.
So I felt like that was a good segue.
Okay.
Well, because I just learned about the fucking triangle of death. Have you heard about this?
Just after you mentioned it.
Yes. So there's a triangle of death on your face, and it's like this.
They can't see you.
Okay, so imagine if you're holding up a triangle, like you're in the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom of the triangle is on your like upper lip, and the top of the triangle is like going in between your eyebrows.
Yeah.
That's the triangle of death. And if you pop any zits in this triangle of death, it can lead to a fatal brain infection.
Okay, you didn't tell me that part.
I sent a screenshot of the article I was reading.
You think I read articles? How long have we been doing this?
It was just a screenshot, and most of it was a diagram. I thought pictures, it's like a Dr. Seuss book. It's like one fish, two fish, three fish. You could give yourself a fatal brain infection.
Yeah, I didn't get that part. I just got this is the zone of death.
Yeah, why do you think they call it the triangle of death, baby?
I thought it was just that it was painful if you pop
it. It is really painful. So I had a zit like right above my upper lip, like right underneath my left strill.
Nostril. Yeah.
I was giving it a little slang.
I know
slang.
You were. I'm translating.
And it hurt
slang.
Really, really bad. And it had like a little white head on it, which, okay, I know I'm the most annoying person in the world. I take really great care of my skin. I also know that's not all part of it. A lot of it is hormones and genetics and stuff. But I've always taken really good care of my skin. And I have never had acne, really, in my life. I maybe get like one or two zits a year.
Yeah.
But they're always the big ones and they always hurt.
Yeah.
It's always like that, right? So I was like, okay, this makes sense. I just started working out. I'm sweating a lot more. Of course, I'm going to get one of my big ones right now. And I saw it and I was like, ooh, this isn't a poppable situation.
No, you cannot pop a pimple on your upper lip ever.
Well, so I learned, I literally just barely touched it and it hurt so bad. I was like, oh no.
It is literally.
I'll die.
Yeah.
If I don't die from a fatal brain fucking thing, I'll just die of pain.
Yeah, it's so painful.
But then as soon as I touched it and I had this flash of pain, it like that so ravened me into a memory. Like,
ooh.
I like went through like a tunnel straight into a memory of a video I watched when I was in junior high on YouTube about zits.
Okay.
And this lady on YouTube, she was like this really pretty lady with really curly hair, and she was like, a lot of teens are dealing with teenage acne. It was like one of those videos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I got there. This is like early internet days. That means I was watching it on the family computer in the family loft computer room.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
The room just for the computer.
Correct. Dial up internet.
Yeah. I'm like, doo-doo-doo. I had to like load a disc into the computer to get myself 60 minutes free.
Was this before or after you were sending people from your church messages on AIM saying you love them?
Oh, probably before. Like, this is a good warm-up. I build my confidence a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to watch a few beauty videos, really get my finger on the pulse of society, and then wait until it gets real dark and sad outside and then get weird.
You're like, I know what boys like.
They want you to be real weird. So sorry to everybody out there. Like, really, guys, my bad if you're listening to this. I am a new person. I have gone to a lot of therapy, okay? Okay. So I, like, remembered this video, and then I Googled it. I was like, maybe this is just, like, a dumb thing I saw on some stupid website I was on, because this was, like, once again, like, earlier internet days. And sure enough, when I Googled it, the triangle of death, not to be confused with the 2020 Oscar-nominated film Triangle of Sadness.
Oh,
different thing.
What about the zone of silence in Mexico?
Oh, not to be confused with the zone of silence. But yeah, it's this part of your face where if you pop zits there, you're at like a super high rate of infection for a brain, and like the infection can spread to your brain really easy through
this
like your nasal cavities.
Yeah, this needs to end. No more
I'm spreading information to the masses.
Thank you. Spread awareness.
We have teenage listeners. They need to know these things.
It's not just teenagers.
We have adult listeners. They need to know these things.
You're almost 30.
We need to know these things.
I just popped a zit. I'm 31.
Yeah, but it wasn't in the zone.
It wasn't in the zone. You know what's funny? My friend Brooke, who actually listens to this podcast. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, Brooke.
Showed up to work today wearing a mask. And I was like, why are you wearing a mask? And she was like, I just really don't want anyone to see this pimple on my upper lip. And I was like, oh my God, Cassidy has the same one.
Bro.
Twins.
Twins. Shout out, Brooke.
Sorry, Brooke. I just told everybody about your zit.
That she was trying to cover with her mask.
Well, it's fine.
Listen.
She'll like it.
It's good. It's good. We got to own our zits.
That's right.
No one can make fun of your zit if you just bring it up first. That's what I've learned.
So true. And that works with really anything.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
Like, if I bring up how embarrassing I was in junior high, no one can do an expose about how weird I was.
Right.
Because it's like, it's not shocking. Everyone already knows.
Right. That's why I always talk about how I have no eyebrows.
Yeah. What are they going to say? Well, you have no eyebrows. You're like, yeah.
I fucking know.
I know. I bring it up constantly.
I pee my pants when I sneeze, which I did earlier today. And then I looked at my husband. I said, damn it, I wanted to make it on the toilet before I sneeze. And he was like, did you just pee? I was like, yes, I did.
He's like, oh my gosh, I'm married. He knew he married an older woman. He didn't know how old.
He said, you're so hot. I was like, I know. Thank you.
I've never loved you more than when you pee your pants when you sneeze.
That's right.
God, imagine how bad you're going to be once you have kids.
Don't.
You're going to be full-time diaper wearer.
I know. Yeah. I'm already aware of that.
Yeah. Well.
What can you do?
I guess you can just lean in. That's why they invented mom jeans, baby.
Yeah, and they have adult diapers, so I'm not worried.
They do.
Yeah.
Is it worth it?
Let me work it. Put my thing down, flip it, and reverse it. What are those lyrics, anyway?
It's literally her reversing it.
Shut the fuck up.
Her saying it backwards.
Stop it right now.
Yeah. You didn't know that? That's the whole point of the song. I'm shocked and awed by this.
That makes so much fucking sense. I always would be like, it's your flipper never friend yet. What does that even mean? Like, I always just said it, and
no,
I had no idea.
Talking backwards.
No, I get it now.
God, you know, just when you thought you couldn't love her anymore, Missy comes through like this.
Wow.
Queen.
Damn. I love learning.
You didn't love learning about the Triangle of Death, so
no.
let's not just say you love learning.
Well, I don't want to learn about bad things. I want to learn about fun, cute, happy things.
Oh.
Is it fun, and cute, or happy?
It's about TV. You love TV.
I love TV.
I watched the first episode of The Last of Us.
Oh.
No interest?
Isn't it like apocalypse?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't do that.
I mean, the first episode was very, like, family. It's a little funny. I don't know. It's good.
My husband watched it. And
it's not gross. It's not like, I know you didn't like Walking Dead because it was too gory.
Yeah.
It's not gory at all, at least so far, where okay. I'm at. And it's very different than, like, normal zombie movies
okay.
so far.
Yeah.
I'm only one episode in.
My husband was watching it the other day and crying, so.
Yeah. Apparently, I've only watched episode one. And the reason I decided I was going to watch episode three is because everyone keeps talking about, or watch it, is because everyone keeps talking about episode three and how it made them cry, and I don't want to feel left out.
Yeah, I don't care enough.
I played the video game when it came out, and I really liked it, so I
What?
It's a video game.
So it is a zombie thing.
Yes.
Okay.
But they're controlled by, like, a fungus. Okay. Have you ever heard?
Probably not.
Of the fungi that can infect ants, and it basically takes over their bodies and makes them do things, like, turns them into, like, little ant robots for the fungi.
Turns them into some fun guys.
They're way more of a fun guy. So the idea is that this fungi evolves to be able to also do the same thing to humans.
Okay.
So basically, they are, like, quote unquote, like zombies, but it's not like a virus. It's a fungal infection.
Okay.
And actually, oh my gosh, I was listening to this really interesting thing on NPR about this from a microbiologist, I think she was. I wish I could remember her name. If you just Google NPR Last of Us interview, it was really cool. Please watch it, or please listen to it, because it'll be way better said than what I'm about to say. But apparently this fungi or fungi, apparently you can also say it fungi.
No, I hate that.
Or fungi.
Nope, I hate that.
This fungus, this mushroom. So apparently this mushroom, it actually doesn't get into the brain. It gets into like everywhere else in your body. So if it really did take over human beings, you would be fully aware of everything it was making you do. Like, let's say you were like ripping your fucking husband apart and going and biting him. You'd be like, I'm so sorry, I'm doing this, honey. Because you have no control over what you're doing. You're like killing your own kid or whatever, you know?
Oh.
Anyway, so did you know that mushrooms share more DNA with us than they do with plants?
What is this?
This is just something I just knew before this. Anyway,
are you giving me a biology lesson?
The Last of Us. Anyway, I heard that episode 3 was really good and that it was cute and that there is a cute gay couple on it. And I am a sucker for queer representation in television. So I want to watch it. But of course, I need to watch it all. I really, really, really did like the video game. But that's why I didn't expect to like the show so much. But it's really good. And it kind of feels like a video game at some points.
I did watch the episode.
You did? Why are you lying?
Because he was watching it, my husband. What am
I supposed to do? Oh, you just watched the cry-sode?
Yeah, while he was watching it.
Do you think I'm going to like it?
I mean, it's sad, yeah.
Okay.
And sweet.
Well, whatever. You just skipped right ahead.
Well, I'm not going to watch the show.
Skipped to my loo.
I was cooking and he was watching it in the living room. What do you want me to do? Turn my ears off?
I actually love a good video game movie. Resident Evil. Amazing. Silent Hill, one of my favorite video games and one of my favorite movies. Comfort movie, even.
This is why I just watch reality TV every day of my life. But I have played the Love Island phone game.
Oh my God, stop. You have not?
I have. I bought it. It was like $20.
Amanda.
It was really fun, too.
No. Did you get to, like, choose to, like, hook up with people and stuff?
Yeah.
What did it do? Was it, like, on The Sims when you bone and it's, like, you get under the covers and it's, like, a flurry?
I wish. It was more, like, just little stick cartoon characters pop up and they're, like, hey, Amber, what are you doing? And then it's, like, choose. You want to go on a date or you want to do this. And then you have to, like, choose one. It's kind of stupid.
Yeah, no, I've seen those. I've seen ads for those before.
But I played it for a very long time.
I think, actually, I even played a game like that like when I was in high school when those first started.
Right.
Because it's like a choose your own adventure type thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what would happen when you would bone someone?
You would go to like the boom boom room.
Is that what they call it on Love Island?
No, it's the hideaway.
Okay. And then like it's just inferred?
Yeah, you don't see anything.
Do you decide, like, is consent given to boom boom?
Yeah, I believe so. Like, okay. Do you want to go? Yes. I always say yes. Obviously.
Your goal is to be a hoe in these situations. You've told me this before.
Yeah, of course. Well, okay, one time I played it, and I was, like, really, I was like, okay, my character is going to just, like, fall in love. They're going to win Love Island.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lost somehow. I don't know how that happened. The second time I played it, I was like, I'm just going to be a ho-ho. And then I did, and I won Love Island.
Okay.
So, hoes always win.
A hoe never gets cold, and a hoe always wins.
That's right.
Remember that, everybody.
Remember.
Words to live by from Amanda Goodness. Put it on an inspirational note card.
Absolutely.
Please. I get inspirational note cards for being a hater, so.
You do.
Yeah.
So, you know what I did realize today?
Hmm.
Like, I will never, because I was kind of, okay, I had this thought. I was like, what if I just, like, slid into some, like, celebrities' DMs and ask them to come on the pod, right? Just for fun. I didn't do it, but I had a whole list in my head of who I was going to do it to.
Post Malone.
No.
Oh, he loves aliens.
Oh, my God. Okay, should we get him on the pod?
Yeah, I've tagged him in stuff on Twitter. I'm trying so hard.
Okay.
Does anyone know Post Malone?
New goal. Post Malone, come on the pod. But my number one, I don't know why. I have no idea. I don't know if he likes true crime. I just think he's hot, so I just kind of wanted him to come on the pod. Penn Badgley.
He has his own podcast. We're always neck and neck with them in the rankings.
That's what I'm saying. So what if I just did a little slidey slide? And I was like, I just will always love hot celebrity men, right? That's just who I am. So if we get celebrities on the pod, I'm just going to be that girl.
Oh, well, maybe we shouldn't have them.
No, we will. I'm happily married.
When she said happily, one of her eyes twitched.
Come on the pod. All of the hot celebrity men.
I was thinking like Rob Lowe.
Yes, so hot.
Well, no, just because he has his own Bigfoot hunting TV show.
Oh, that too.
See, I'm thinking things that are like more on brand.
Well, no. We can, it can be a mix.
I think like Brittany Bronski, is that her name?
Brittany Broski?
Broski, is that her name?
Yeah.
From, like, who does the TikToks. I feel like she would have a good amount to say about, like, UFO sightings and stuff.
Oh,
I could really see that.
Okay,
I could see her I could see her flourishing under that subject.
I'm thinking new goal of 2023, just slide into the DMs of every celebrity.
Why not? Guys, just start tagging them in our shit.
You only live once.
YOLO.
Let's do it. Unless you're reincarnated. Then you live more than once. But, you know, maybe Post Malone will want to talk about that. How do I know?
Post Malone, so like I watched his interview. He was like on a couple other podcasts, like Joe Rogan and a couple other things or whatever. But he had a ton to say about like UFOs and aliens and that kind of stuff. Like,
love this.
And I was like, dang, first of all, Posty. I also love light beer.
You have that in common.
You could come on the podcast and drink light beer.
Can he come in the closet, though?
I mean, it's tight in here.
But we
do live in LA, Posty, so you could technically come in the closet.
If any celebrity that lives in LA is going to come on the pod, they have to get in the closet with us.
Oh, well, yeah, just for posterity.
Yeah.
What are we going to do, rent a studio? No.
No. I was like, Zoom, but no.
Oh, no. They got to come in the,
you gotta
they gotta
get
come
in the closet.
In the pod closet.
Yeah.
I know. I've been telling Andrew from Let's Not Meet. I'm like, when are you going to come down?
Please.
Get in the closet. You're going to love it.
It's nice and tight.
The energy is way different in the closet than over Zoom.
Agreed.
Yeah.
He can sit right on top of all your gowns.
Listen, I could clean out a gown or two.
No.
The gowns are great for sucking up sound, though, let me tell you.
Yeah, I stay, keep them.
It's part of the charm. But let's...
meet.
Read.
Let's not meet.
Let's read. Some of our new patrons.
Okay. Are we still on a backlog?
We are still very deeply in a backlog. I'm so sorry. And thank you, everybody who's been joining. Like, you guys are amazing. So we will read you. Just give us some in. You know
what
I mean?
We'll read you to filth.
That's right, girl.
That's right.
Slay. Okay. So let's say welcome to Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Welcome to Hannah.
Hello, Hannah.
Welcome to Lisa.
Lisa.
Lisa is from a different country, from Europe. Ooh, fun.
Ooh.
Welcome to Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Welcome to Dawn.
Dawn.
And Dawn joined for the whole year. Oh, so did Rachel. They both joined for the whole year.
Ooh.
We love that.
You're stuck with us.
Dawn, great name. Just makes me think of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, I was thinking like Twilight. I don't know why. There's nobody named Dawn.
New Dawn. Dawn. Breaking Dawn.
Breaking Dawn.
Welcome to... Ooh, now we're talking about a good name here. Maricela. Beautiful name, Maricela.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful name. Thank you for Nicole.
Hello, Nicole.
Who has a very cool spelling of their name, and they joined for the whole year. And thank you to Roxana.
Ooh, Roxana.
Wait, I want to read one more just because I love this name.
Okay, go for it.
Natasha.
Ooh, I do love Natasha.
I love that name. And I don't know if it's because I love Natasha from Orange is the New Black and Russian Doll.
Oh my gosh. She is you.
I love her.
She is you. She's in a new show and I was going to watch it and I'm like, this is just Cassidy.
Really?
Yes.
That is the biggest compliment I've ever gotten in my life. I love her.
And she looks so fucking hot now. Have you seen her?
She's just like fully, she's always been hot first
of
all.
No, I know, but like she's getting older, right? And I was like looking at this.
She's aging like a fine wine because
literally
she doesn't
fine
have
wine.
Any children.
Fine wine. Shut up.
No offense, but.
Anyway, she's super hot.
Yeah, she's super hot. And she's always been super hot since she was in
American Pie.
Even older. I'm not me. I'm a cheerleader. Ugh, crap. What was it called? Sorry.
She gets sent away because she's
gay, a lesbian.
And they're trying to send her to Christian camp.
But I'm a cheerleader. Yeah, But I'm a Cheerleader.
That's a good movie.
It's a 1999 American black comedy. Oh my gosh. She was so good in that.
That's such a good movie.
Natasha Lyonne. That's her last
name. Natasha Lyonne.
She's married to, or at least in a serious relationship with, Fred Armisen.
Oh.
Yeah. They've been together for a long time. I don't know if they're
still
together. They might have broken up through the pandemic, but last time I saw Fred Armisen, they were still together.
How did I not know that?
Yeah. Huh. I feel like that's such a good pairing. They're both kind of weird. Okay, this might be like way too specific.
For
normal people.
But we're not normal, so it doesn't matter.
No, I know, but I'm just going to like say something that I know. I know at least like a handful of people that like I know and that like I'm friends with. Understand this of like the hyper, you have like the weird hyper fixation on like a terrible tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have friends who are obsessed with 9/11, right? Or like they're obsessed with Pearl Harbor, or they're obsessed with the JFK assassination,
the sinking of the Titanic.
Sinking of the Titanic's a great one.
Yeah.
Like any of that stuff. Like, and so mine, when I was a kid, was 100% the Amerithrax poisoning.
Okay.
And I know that you know this because I told you once when we were in college. So me and Amanda went to college in New York City, for those of you who might be new here.
12 years ago. And, so...
But in New York City, everywhere you go, like obviously if you go anywhere in public, people try to hand you things. Anywhere you go in New York City, someone is trying to hand you something. Like, yes. I'm talking every 5 feet. Unless you're in like Brooklyn or the Bronx or whatever, but if you're in Manhattan proper, there's someone trying to hand you a coupon or a club thing
or a CD. And then you take the CD because you're like, oh my God, thank you. And then they go, okay, that's $10. And you go, I didn't ask for it.
And then you try to give it back and they go, no, you already took it. Give me $10.
Yeah.
It's a scam, guys. Don't fall for it.
Don't do it.
Just put the CD on the ground and walk away.
I didn't ask for it. You handed it to me.
So I used to tell Amanda, every time someone would try to hand me something, I'd be like, "They, you know, they never caught that anthrax guy."
Yes, you're right. I do remember this, actually.
Because I was obsessed with, and like, I don't mean obsessed in like a good way. Like, I'm not like I'm a fan of the anthrax poisonings. I just mean like it was something when I was a kid and I heard about it. I don't know why it stuck with me so, mm-hmm. so hard. And I feel like a lot of people don't know the details of it because it did happen so close to 9/11.
Ah.
Yeah. So I'm going to be talking about today the Amerithrax poisonings.
Perfect.
My sources were mostly just NPR.org, FBI.gov. And on NPR, by the way, I literally read like 16 different articles on NPR because they covered like every different angle, including I listened to a thing from Fresh Air on them, FBI.gov, and then a lot of Wikipedia.
Okay.
And this went such a different direction than I was thinking, for the record. All right, so let's take it back.
Okay.
September 11th, 2001.
Oh, you're literally taking me to 9/11.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shocking day for the United States, uh-huh. right? People were on edge after the attacks, rightfully so. We weren't exactly sure who, why, where, when, all that shit. All we knew is that, like, America was going to war.
Right.
So everybody's real amped up. There's a lot of hatred towards Islamic people, mm-hmm. Arab people, Sikhs, because people are ignorant and don't know the difference between Sikhs and Muslims. One thing I do have to say I respect, I think the man is a war criminal, as are most U.S. presidents, but George W. Bush literally went to a mosque and gave a speech about how you guys better not be hating on Muslims.
Oh, really?
Like in the days after 9/11.
Oh.
Which I respect that.
Yeah. That is something to be respected.
Even a broken clock's right twice a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or at least once a day, depending on the clock. Okay. So this is like huge and it covered the news media like crazy for literally years. I mean, we're still in wars that are the aftermath of 9/11. But only 7 days after the attacks, on September 18th, 2001, someone walked into a post office in Trenton, New Jersey, and sent out 5 letters.
Uh-oh.
On October 4th, only a few weeks later, a tabloid journalist who worked for The Sun,
mm-hmm.
it's the same parent company that owns the National Enquirer, his name was Bob Stevens, he spikes a high fever and is extremely disoriented. So he's brought into the ER, vomiting, shortness of breath, heart palpitations, incoherent, and the doctors are super confused. He's testing negative for everything. At first, they're like, this has to be some sort of infection, like MRSA. Test negative. Okay, maybe he has meningitis. It's not meningitis. Then they kind of do this Hail Mary panel of tests on him, and he tests positive for anthrax, which I did not know this, and maybe I'm an idiot. Please don't come into my DMs and tell me how stupid I am. Because maybe this is very stupid.
I'm sure I'm more of an idiot.
I did not know that anthrax was a bacteria.
Well, I was going to sit here and ask you, what the fuck is anthrax?
I don't know why I thought it was like a poison.
That's what I thought.
That was like extracted from a plant even, or created in a lab.
That's absolutely what I thought it was.
It's a bacterium.
Okay. So it just makes you sick.
So it's an infection.
Got it.
It's a bacterial infection. And it's treated with antibiotics. So okay. You don't need like an antidote or, you know what I mean? Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Once again, there were so many things for someone who was so hyperfixated. I think I was just convinced for some reason that I was important enough that somebody was going to anthrax me.
I mean, there's still time, baby.
There's still time. Do not mail me anthrax. Okay. So immediately the CDC is contacted about these results because anthrax is super contagious, super deadly, and also really dangerous. So they are like, all right, we need to lock down his house. We need to lock down his offices because he worked at this big office that ran a bunch of different tabloids.
Sorry, what?
In Florida.
Okay.
Boca Raton.
Got it.
So they lock down his home and office. They're searching everywhere. They're testing everything. They find spores of anthrax all over his desk and on his keyboard. And in the mail room at his publisher's office.
Uh-oh.
So this is literally like the mail room where his mail would come through. Did you have a question? You looked like you had a question.
No, I was going to ask you, where is he located? And you answered it.
Oh, Boca Raton. Yeah. On October 5th, at the age of 63, Bob passes away from pulmonary anthrax.
Oh, my God.
Which this is the most dangerous form of anthrax. And it's anthrax that you inhale and it gets into your lungs. And basically because it's so wet and moist and like there's a lot of places to hang out in your lungs, it just like thrives.
Why is everything so terrifying all the time?
Yeah, the world is a horrifying place.
So now it's like, this was not on my radar. Thanks, Cassidy.
And apparently you can get anthrax from like digging in dirt that has anthrax in it. And also from infected animal meat.
Great. Fantastic.
But just so you know, like, it's super, super, super rare. It's literally way more rare than any normal disease or infection. That's why the CDC was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Because this can have anywhere between a 20 to an 80% death rate.
Wow.
And the 80% death rate is the most dangerous kind, which is pulmonary anthrax, which is when you inhale it. So it turns out some of the people in the mailroom had also gotten sick, but the doctors had just said like, oh, it must be pneumonia because it had really similar symptoms because they had like really mild anthrax. But they did test positive for anthrax. And then they end up testing several hundred people who would have come into contact with Bob or any of Bob's materials. And several of them also tested positive for anthrax. And since the treatment is just antibiotics, they started all of these people on antibiotics, like, just to be safe. Like, even the ones who didn't show symptoms.
Everyone at work.
Anyone who tested positive, even if they didn't show symptoms. Because you can still transmit it, or you could still have something at your home that has it on it, basically. They don't know how exactly you got it. Did you get it directly from him? Did you touch a letter that you brought home? We don't know. And the problem with anthrax is, like, there's so many different types. Like, there's subcutaneous anthrax, which is through your skin.
Okay.
So if you have, like, a little cut, it can get in there. And that creates, like, a boil or a black mark where it basically starts eating away at your skin, which is obviously less deadly but way gross. And you still have to get it treated. And it's just all bad, man. It's all bad. So, of course, while this is super tragic and very strange, there are still about 2,000 deaths a year from anthrax poisoning. But this was the first U.S. death since the 1970s. But strange things happen. I mean, we had someone who had the bubonic plague in Texas like 3 years ago. So, like, it happens.
Oh.
But very quickly, it becomes clear that this is not an isolated incident. By October 9th, 2001, only 4 days after Bob Stevens' death, the FBI gets involved because other people and objects begin testing positive for anthrax.
Still in Florida?
No.
No.
The rest of them are actually all in New York.
Okay.
Well, for this wave. It turns out that four other letters that were postmarked from Trenton, New Jersey that same day, two other media conglomerates, including ABC News, CBS News, NBC News, and the New York Post, which are all in New York, also received letters.
Never trust anyone from Trenton, New Jersey.
So true. Never trust someone from New Jersey. Looking at you, Kate.
That I have so many people I know from New Jersey. So.
Looking at all of you.
Fuck you guys.
Well, I know what's funny is I actually love New Jersey. It's like really beautiful and nice. And like,
that's true.
The people there are like really passionate and interesting and the food's good.
You know who's from New Jersey?
Who?
The Jonas Brothers.
Of course. Your favorite people in
the
world.
You're
welcome. So the actual letter that infected Bob Stevens was never found. And another one of the letters was also not found, so those ones are just inferred. Because I can imagine, especially in 2001, there's a lot of snail mail coming through media offices, and I'm going to assume that this involved quite a bit of heavy usage of trash bins. Like, spam folders, basically, mm-hmm. but for snail mail. And also, this letter was insane, and we're going to assume that this is the same letter that Bob Stevens possibly could have gotten or that could have been sent to his office, because both the New York Post and NBC News did find their letters and they did find the anthrax inside of them.
Oh, yeah.
That contained a brownish, like they said it looked like dog food, like brownish like bits inside of it. And this is what the note said.
I forgot that there was a letter attached.
Yeah. So it was handwritten in like block lettering on white paper, all in caps, and they were all copies of each other. So like the two copies were photocopies of each other. So that's why they assumed that the lost pieces of mail were probably the same.
Okay.
And it read 091101. So 9/11, 2001. This is next. Take penicillin now. Death to America. Death to Israel. Allah is great.
Okay.
One of these letters was actually addressed to Tom Brokaw, who is like one of the most famous TV news personalities of all time.
Okay.
He was like one of the OGs on Good Morning America.
Yeah, that name sounds familiar. Yeah.
So multiple NBC News employees tested positive for anthrax, and including a 7-month-old child of an ABC News employee who they had like brought in to like meet their coworkers.
Oh, no.
Also tested positive, but they only just developed a rash and like some sores. They had a complete recovery.
Thank God. I was going to say, if all these people just fucking died.
No.
Did they still not catch the anthrax guy?
Just wait.
Cassidy. This better be solved.
I told you that this had a twist ending that I was not expecting at all. We're going to get there together, okay?
Okay, okay.
You're going to have the same shock and awe I did this week.
All right.
So on October 15th of 2001, so this is like all in a span of like 2 weeks, which is crazy. Things get even crazier when Democrat and Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle confirms that anthrax was also found in his office.
Uh-oh.
And the entire Senate is evacuated and shut down. The letter had been addressed to Daschle, and there was a second letter that had been incorrectly rerouted to a different part of Virginia because of an error when they were reading the address that had been meant for Patrick Leahy, who is a Democrat. And he was the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So two Democratic senators. And these letters read something different, but did read the same thing again. And like I said, they're photocopies of each other again. So this one said, 09-11-01, 9-11. You cannot stop us. We have this anthrax. You die now. Are you afraid? Death to America. Death to Israel. Allah is great.
Sounds similar.
Similar, but just a little different. Like, in the first one, it said, like, go get penicillin right now because they knew antibiotics would, like, heal it. This one, it is less so. So these letters were allegedly sent from Princeton, New Jersey, and two separate mailboxes of the over 500 mailboxes that they tested positive for anthrax.
Jesus. This is an epidemic.
Yeah. A staffer who opened the letter was hospitalized, and unfortunately, two Washington, D.C. postal workers, Thomas Morris Jr. and Joseph Kersine, both died of anthrax poisoning.
They were just the messenger.
Just from handling the letters to the senators.
Don't kill the messenger.
Don't kill anybody.
I mean, usually, yeah, but that too. Oh, boy.
And then on October 31st, which was Halloween, Kathy Wynn, who was an older lady who worked in New York City at an eye, ear, and throat hospital, dies from inhalation anthrax.
Okay.
It is 100% unknown how she came into contact with said anthrax.
What the fuck?
She is not related to any of these other people. She doesn't work for the media. She literally just works at a doctor's office in New York City.
So someone walked in?
We have no idea. And then the final fatality was that of Ottilie Lundgren, who was a 94-year-old widow of a very prominent judge from Oxford, Connecticut. We also do not know how she was exposed to anthrax, but she also died from inhalation anthrax.
94.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
So when all is said and done, there were at least 22 confirmed anthrax infections. 11 of those were the life-threatening inhalation kind, which if inhaling it is the most dangerous way to get, like, exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And at least five people died.
What the fuck? Who did this?
That's a great question. So the two types of anthrax sent in the first and second round of letters were extremely different in texture. The first was said to be clumpy brown and compared to, like I said earlier, dog food. Where the second, which was sent to the politicians, was extremely potent, like much more potent than the first round, and was a very, very fine powder. So when it was open, the powder kind of like,
oh my God.
Which is why they think that one was so much more lethal and so infected so many more people. But they did know that these letters were related because the FBI concluded very quickly that the spores were from the same strain of bacterium called the Ames strain. And this strain was isolated from a cow in Texas for research in 1981. This strain was being studied at 16 different facilities in 4 different countries, including the United States, Canada, the UK, and Sweden.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, I don't know if you remember this Law & Order episode that was based on a true story of that guy who was giving women AIDS on purpose.
Yes.
And like lying to them and saying like, no, I'm clean. And then like giving it to them because he was pissed he had it. And they could find out that he was the one that gave it to them because AIDS mutates every time it's given to someone. And so they could basically trace all of it back to him based on like the strain, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Kind of like how COVID has had like a bunch of different strains. The fucking common flu has a million different strains. So they were able to basically use like this strain of bacterium and trace it back to this research cow from 1981.
Wow, that poor cow.
R.I.P. that cow. So after all this went down, there were multiple copycats. So tons of letters started going out everywhere, which I think is why, and I definitely had this misconception, that this was way longer. Like, I thought this was happening for, like, months, and then it happened to, like, tons and tons and tons of people, when really it didn't, because there were so many copycats, and every single one was basically treated as seriously as they could, because anthrax is really, really scary.
Yeah. Why can't people just, like, be unique?
Why can't people just, like, stop?
That, too.
Just, like, read a book.
Yeah.
Eat, like, a nice sandwich.
Listen to music.
Go eat a Jersey Mike's. Ugh. Go to Jersey Mike's Italian Sub, Mike's Way, add mayo, add the relish, add banana peppers. You'll be so happy. Do that instead.
And while you're doing that, listen to some 90s pop.
That might help too.
It will.
It'll help.
Trust me.
Amanda says. During this time, they literally have tons of the researchers who actually research like vaccines and stuff for anthrax working to identify to see if these are real anthrax threats. Because there's like baking powder getting sent around mm-hmm. being like, oh, this is anthrax.
I get it.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
It also didn't help that one of the bigger research facilities for anthrax had actually been destroyed on October 10th. That was in Iowa. So they have no idea the amount of anthrax that could have been stolen, let's say, if somebody had, like, while before it was destroyed or when it was destroyed, because they don't, like, normally they can go in and measure, like, oh, we're missing a cup of anthrax.
Okay, I'm just a little confused here, because you said earlier anthrax is a virus. Right?
It's a bacteria.
A bacteria. So why does it look like powder or dog food?
Okay, so anthrax is a very rare bacteria that when used properly, and by properly I mean horribly, can be used in biowarfare.
Okay.
So it's kind of like when we talked about foot and mouth disease, how like the Nazis were using that to wipe out cattle. And then if it gets transferred to humans, it can be like a really deadly thing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they were trying to research it the different companies were trying to research ways to have some sort of vaccine or really effective treatment for anthrax. Let's say if we were attacked by a foreign government that decided to use this as biowarfare. It's biowarfare has been signed by like most countries in the world to be illegal. You're not allowed to stockpile. You're not allowed to create new ones. You're not allowed to like use them. So yeah. So similar to like what they were doing or saying that they were doing on that island off the coast of Long Island, saying like, oh,
Plum Island.
Like, oh, we're researching this so that we can come up with a cure, come up with a vaccine and stuff like that. Kind of that's why there was a couple different facilities in the United States working with anthrax.
Okay. Sorry, you're making my trichotillomania. Yeah, you're making it flare up a little.
Just
I have anxiety, so
just
I'm
hold your drink.
It'll make literally you, ripping my
stop
eyelashes
it.
Out.
Hold
right
your
now.
Drink with okay. your hand. That'll be better.
I kept on noticing it. I was like, why do I keep on ripping my
it.
Eyelashes out?
Hold your drink. It'll make you feel better.
Okay.
So in August of 2002, this is way before our 2020s,
yeah.
Attorney General John Ashcroft labeled an official person of interest.
Okay, who is it?
So this person is Stephen Hatfield. He was a CIA contracted physician, pathologist, and biological weapons person, and now person of interest.
You can't trust anyone.
Throughout this investigation, his phone was tapped, his house was raided multiple times by the FBI, and he was relentlessly covered in the media for the following years. Until, in 2008, Hatfield filed a suit against the FBI, which ended with him being exonerated, and he won $5.8 million because they had been harassing him.
From 2002 to 2008?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he deserves $5 million.
Yeah. So suddenly, as soon as the FBI loses this suit against the now exonerated Hatfield, they randomly have a new suspect.
Really? After all those years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So they decide now that this new scientist who's on their radar is Bruce Edwards Ivins. And Ivins randomly, like a month after Hatfield was completely exonerated and won his suit, according to his government employers, began to start acting really strange and struggling with depression. So much so that they started slowly removing his ability to get into highly classified zones where he worked.
Okay.
They said
you have to be really fucking smart to pull this off.
Yes, but just hear me out. So They said he seemed like he was struggling with depression and anger issues. His job is slowly pushing him out. And then he's actually even involuntarily committed to a psych ward in June of 2008 after the FBI comes out and formally declares that they're considering prosecuting him in this case.
Okay.
And then on July 27th, 2008, Ivins was found unconscious in his home. And after being rushed to the ER, he died of a Tylenol overdose.
What? Tylenol?
Tylenol PM, yeah.
Oh, my God.
After this, the FBI is like, okay, well, we're calling off the investigation. The guy who did it's dead. And we're definitely sure it was him. You know, the same way they were sure that it was Hatfill.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the official story. Actually, the FBI came out saying how he was so mentally unwell and said that the reason he wanted Anthrax to be out in the public again was because he had been spending a lot of time in his career testing Anthrax vaccines, and he was afraid he was going to get defunded. So the FBI said, quote, "The Anthrax vaccine program, which Dr. Ivins had devoted his entire career to for more than 20 years, was failing. Following the Anthrax attacks, however, his program was suddenly rejuvenated. A possible motive was his concern about the end of the vaccination program, and one theory is that by launching these attacks, he creates a situation, a scenario, where people all of a sudden realize they need to have this vaccine." And that is the FBI's official statement on this.
Okay.
Meanwhile, everybody else in his life and even his coworkers think that this is completely bogus.
What do they think?
So, Henry S. Hine, who is a microbiologist who actually worked with Ivins as a researcher, told the National Academy of Sciences, who were investigating this entire thing in 2010. They like had like a panel of 16 people who like were like, okay, we need to investigate what's going on here, because if this guy really was stealing anthrax from the facility and then sending it out to people, like that's a big breach of scientific morals and ethics. Like, we got to figure out how to make sure this doesn't happen again.
That's why he took too much Tylenol PM.
So they bring in his coworkers, and his coworker literally says, it is impossible that Ivins could have produced the anthrax used in the attacks without detection from us. Like, there's absolutely no way, based on the fact that we measure everything, we work with all the time. Ivins was even on the team that was detecting whether or not these false flag copycat things were anthrax or not. But guess what? So was the other guy that they were accusing.
Yeah.
So they kind of were just like all over the place.
Okay, but then why did he off himself?
That's a great question. If you think that he really did that to himself. So let's get deeper into this. It also turns out that the link between the types of anthrax in the attacks was not as strong as the FBI had originally stated. Further, like going forward, other scientists who came forward and also tested the anthrax that was found in the different letters that were sent out said that there were massive differences in the mutations, saying that these could have come from completely different facilities that had had generation upon generation of mutations upon this original 1981 cow from Ames. So yes, while it might be from the same strain, these could have been potentially from completely different facilities. And one person would not have had access to all of these facilities. The National Academy of Sciences actually came out and said that they thought the FBI greatly overstated how connected these strains of anthrax actually were.
My brain is broken.
So leading up to this poor man's ultimate demise, he was interviewed many times and put under police pressure. Something very similar that was happening to Hatfill, obviously, before he was like, fuck it, I'm going to fight back and I'm going to sue you guys because you have no proof. When Dr. Ivins was sent to involuntary...
The psych ward.
Psych ward, basically, yeah. is he had been talking with a social worker named Jean C. Dooley. And Dooley had actually applied for a restraining order against him, saying that, like, oh, you know, he had threatened her and all these other things that happened. He had said he needed to get retribution against his coworkers, that he was an angry man. He was mad at his coworkers and he was clearly delusional and all this stuff. But let's keep in mind also that she was on house arrest at the time that this went down.
Okay, for what?
Because she had been convicted of not only driving under the influences, but also charged with the battery of her ex-husband. She was a known ex-motorcycle gang member who had openly and knowingly abused heroin, cocaine, and PCP.
Let's trust her.
And when she ended up giving the incriminating, quote-unquote incriminating voicemails from Dr. Ivins to a local newspaper, she said, listen, you can't print what they exactly say, but you can, like, print the gist. She gave it to them, and when they reported on it, they said that there was nothing threatening in them, and they mostly were just, like, a really depressed guy talking about how his life kind of sucked in these voicemails. So they're like, he didn't threaten himself or you or anybody else. What are you talking about? Because, like, she was like, these are extremely violent voicemails. She's coming out and saying this, but she wouldn't release them to the public, and they never were. But the one, like, group of people from this magazine who got them, they were like, hey, we were not given permission to actually, like, quote them directly, but we're allowed to talk about what we heard. And what we heard was just, like, a deeply sad man who was kind of going through it because he was under investigation from the FBI.
Yeah.
So her testimony was actually used to get Ivins involuntarily committed into this psych ward. And he died of this alleged overdose 5 days after he was released from this hospital.
Suspicious.
So now we have to think about what would be the goal of someone to do something like this. Like, I don't know, if you want to have an extra reason on top of 9/11 to, like, invade the Middle East, like, maybe would you not say, like, we're going to use biological weapons against you and it's going to be all over the media and we're going to say praise Allah at the end?
This makes sense.
I just feel like this is the shadiest fucking story in the world, and most people that, like, actually were involved in the case besides the FBI do not think that he did it.
Really?
Even though that's, like, kind of the official story from the FBI and from the government. Like, other doctors and stuff are like, no, there's no way Ivins did it. Like, there's literally no way. Bruce Edward Ivins was a confused man, and he might have even hurt himself because he couldn't handle the pressure.
Yeah.
He might have completed suicide. But, like, there is very, very, very small chance he actually did this.
Well, I'm sorry, but if the fucking FBI is trying to tell me, right, you did this, I know you did this, and even if I didn't do it, it's the FBI. I'm going to be scared.
So there was, like, an interview he did that parts of it were released, and he says things like, I'm not a killer in my heart. I know I wouldn't hurt anybody knowingly. And they're like, so you can say for a fact you never sent any anthrax anywhere ever, not even once? And he's like, listen, I don't even know. Like, I just, like... Like, he was, like, kind of having a breakdown. He was like, I literally can't remember, but I know myself and I know that I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, so sad, like, reading it. You're like, oh, my God. Like, this dude is clearly going through it and they're trying. Because that's a big thing that, like, police try to make you do. Like, make you think, like, are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you got really mad and you couldn't help yourself and you hit her. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's a huge police technique. Imagine how much worse it is with the FBI.
Right.
And plus, you've been under the pressure of FBI surveillance. And everyone at your job is gaslighting you, making you think you're acting weird. They all work for the government.
Yeah.
You don't think they're slowly taking away his credentials to make him look bad?
I just don't understand, like...
Allegedly.
Why are we not, looking for the actual person here? Because obviously that's a scary fucking thing that whoever did this did.
Well, I think what people who believe that it was not Ivins think is that it was either somebody else in the government or it was on purpose from the government to give us another reason to invade the Middle East.
Oh, boy.
That's why it said, praise Allah.
I love when you do these, you know. No one's going to come after us.
Well, in my defense, I did not realize the extent of this until I was far too deep into the story. And there's even so much more. There's so much more. I did, like, literally, you guys, you could fall down this rabbit hole for like 4 months.
I'm sure there are a lot of listeners that will, because they love to go down rabbit holes.
Because I was thinking, like, I was like, beep, 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 beep. Like, oh, this is one I already kind of know. And like, you know, it's kind of a big guy, but it's interesting and has a lot of interesting stuff. And it's not, what? Who? God damn it. Not again. Basically.
Not again. Always. Yeah. Always getting yourself in trouble with the government.
I know.
Watch list. Watch list.
At least it was the FBI, not the CIA this time.
So true. But you don't think they talk?
Oh,
I think they might talk. Yeah.
I just feel like the CIA is more likely to disappear me than the FBI.
I just really hope that your face is plastered on the walls.
They're like throwing darts at me. They're like, this fucking bitch.
This is the girl. Listen, she's not really that much of a threat, but she's really fucking annoying.
Yeah, literally. And they have like a little tiny headshot of you, and they're like, just for that Titanic thing that one time. She's less bad, but that was still annoying.
The one time.
Yeah. Fuck her too, but a little bit less than this bitch. Yeah. All right.
That was really
twisty, turny, terrible.
Stressful. I started plucking out my eyelashes, but
that's how I know I did a good job when Amanda starts plucking out her eyelashes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I just want to know who did that.
I was like, I'm going to do true crime this week. I'm not going to do a conspiracy. And then it just immediately spiraled into it.
Oh,
I'm
that
sorry.
Was a full-blown conspiracy, baby. When I asked you what you were doing, you said crime mystery. That was conspiracy.
Okay, because that at that point, that's what my story was. I had not gotten to the end yet, okay?
Well, thanks for that. Now I have a new fear in life.
Anthrax?
Once again. Yeah.
Oh, welcome. Join the club.
You're always unlocking new fears in me.
Anti-anthrax, anthrax club.
Okay, so today I am going to talk about kind of a well-known one, a kind of a big boy, I think. We'll see. Tom Young and Keith Reinhardt.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, this is a very big one.
Yeah. So my sources today were thedarksidedoc.com, strangeoutdoors.com, historicmysteries.com by Les Hewitt, CBSNews.com by Rick Salinger, Medium.com by L. Small, The Chicago Tribune by Tracy Swartz, an episode of Lost in the Wild, and an episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
Love
from
Unsolved Mysteries.
1991, the year I was born.
Great year.
Great year. So our story today takes place in a small town that is often called the Living Ghost Town. And this is Silver Plume, Colorado, in Clear Creek County. So in the 1980s in this town, there were about 200 residents, and I think now it's down to like 130. So very small town, very much a ghost town, as people would call it. This is one of the towns that you, my dear friend Cassidy, would probably like to live in.
Love it. Historic. It's small.
Small. Not many people. Not a lot to do. Maybe there's a bar. I don't know.
As long as there's a bar or two and one restaurant,
yeah,
I'm
that's
happy.
All you need. I did read that on the north side of town, so north of Pendleton Mountain, they only get about 2.5 hours of sunlight in the winter. And then on the south side, you won't even see the sun for like 6 full weeks.
Why? In Colorado?
Yeah, in this town.
Okay.
So not my cup of tea. I need some sunlight.
I would not like that either. I would fall into a deep, deep depression.
Oh, would you not? I thought you liked that kind of shit.
No.
Oh.
If I don't see the sun for like a single day, I lose my mind.
Well, you don't leave your house sometimes.
No, I know. I'll literally go sit out on my balcony and just like get some vitamin D in me.
Soak up the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one man that lived on the south side of Pendleton Mountain was a Mr. Tom Young. He was an Army veteran, and he lived alone with his dog, Gus, who just happened to be his best friend. And he owned a bookshop on Main Street. So this guy, from what I read about him, he mostly kept to himself, but he was well-liked in the area. And you know, there's not many people to choose from. After all, there's only 200 people, so you got to like somebody. But he did have friends. And in the summer of 1987, he began telling all his friends and family that he was going to go to Europe for a few weeks for like a little vacay. And everyone was like, cool, have fun, like enjoy your time. See you later. On September 7th, 1987, Tom Young closed up his bookshop and headed out with his dog Gus by his side. And it wasn't until almost about a month later.
I was gonna say, so Gus is going to Europe too?
Gus was tagging along for the ride. Yeah, okay. Nobody asked any questions. They were just like, see you later. Have a good time.
Sounds right.
Yeah. Gus wanted to go see Europe. So it wasn't until almost a whole month later, when he still wasn't home, that people were like, where the fuck is Tom? What's going on here? People didn't know if he was still in Europe, if he even ever went to Europe, or what happened to him. And by October 2nd of that year, Tom was officially declared a missing person. So a few months go by, and the guy that owned the building where Tom Young's bookshop was, he actually owned a cafe in the same building. So it was like two units in this building. So it was the cafe, and then it was the bookshop right next door, kind of like a duplex.
Okay.
Whatever you would call it.
Like a dual storefront.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the guy that owned this building was a guy named Ted Parker. And a few months after Tom Young's disappearance, he calls up his buddy Keith Reinhardt and he's like, hey, dude, I know you've been wanting to get out of Chicago for a while because you're kind of going through it. You don't like the busy city. Maybe you should come over here, clear your head for a while. I have an opening in my building. Come on by and let's see what we can do for you. So Keith Reinhardt was a sports writer for the Daily Herald in Chicago. He was about to turn 50 years old. He was newly married and he had two children. But he seemed to kind of be caught up in like a midlife crisis a little bit. He didn't like the city life. And he just felt like he was stuck in his job, as we all have felt in life. But by all accounts, as far as I saw, he did love his family. He loved his wife. So that was not an issue. But I think he was just kind of in search of something more.
Yeah, of course. I mean, here's the thing. If you think you're going to find full fulfillment in being a parent or full fulfillment in being a partner to somebody, like, you're going to be let down. You have to have multiple facets of your life fulfilled.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to be fucking depressed.
Exactly. So he's chatting with his friend Ted on the phone. He's like, yeah, dude, like, that sounds like a great idea. I should absolutely come to Silver Plume just for a little while just to regroup myself. So he tells his job he's going to take a 3-month leave of absence. And his wife is like, yeah, take some time for yourself. You know, he always wanted to start writing a novel. So she's like, maybe go up there, write your novel. You've always been wanting to do that. I support you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Great wife. And in the beginning of the summer of June 1988, Keith heads to Silver Plume and he actually decides to rent out the old bookstore spot that Tom Young owned. And he turned it into a small antique business while he was there.
Wow, these people are industrious.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. You're only going to be there for 3 months and you already have your own business. I don't understand, but good for you. So, of course, the first thing he hears about when he gets there is about this guy, Tom Young, and his dog, Gus, and how they just disappeared the year before and no one has ever heard of them since. So Keith is like, tell me more. This is so intriguing.
As like, a writer, too, you're
especially,
like... Especially...
Yep. Yeah, he's like, I want to know more. This is so interesting. Oh, my gosh. And he's like, you know, this story is so interesting to me. I'm going to write my novel kind of based on this disappearance. So the main character that he kind of comes up with is a mix of himself and Tom Young, in a sense. And he names the main character Guy Gypsum. So in order to write this novel... Like I said, Keith just wanted to know everything about Tom Young and his disappearance. So he goes around to everyone in town. He's asking the locals who knew him. He's just asking a bunch of questions, really trying to get the essence of who Tom was as a person.
Yeah, of course.
So then the following month, on July 31st, 1988, two hunters are up on the mountain just doing their thing when they discover a skeleton of a man propped up against a tree with a bullet hole in the skull.
Oh, okay. That's not good.
And only a few feet away from the skeleton was a pistol, a backpack, and the skeletal remains of a dog, also with a bullet in the skull.
And the dog, you could have just let the dog go free.
I know. I thought the same thing. But that's right, people. This was indeed Tom Young and Gus. So it was later discovered that the pistol was actually bought by Tom Young himself only 4 days before his disappearance. So the police is like, oh, this is an open and shut case. It's so clear that Tom Young went up to the mountains, shot his dog, and then he completed suicide himself.
Yeah.
And they were like, that's it. That's what it is. But all the locals and all of Tom's friends and family, you know, were not convinced that this was the case, because everyone, the first thing everyone said was, there's no way Tom would have hurt his dog.
That, to me, I would say is the biggest red flag, because people love to say, I mean, I had a friend who completed suicide last year, mm-hmm. and literally, like, the first thing when I found out was like, what? Him? Like,
yeah.
No, that's not him. Like, we have plans next week. Like,
right.
That's not how that works. But as that person had a dog, I could tell you if they would have also hurt their dog, I would have been much more shocked and
right.
confused.
So that was pretty much like the biggest thing was the dog situation. Everyone's yeah. like, there's no way he would have hurt his dog. This was his best fucking friend. So because of just that one aspect of it, people did suspect foul play kind of right off the bat. But authorities were like, no, this was so clearly a suicide. We're done here. The
and what,
end.
What year is this again?
1988.
Okay. So it's not like 1916 or something. Where,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now Keith finds this information out and he's like, holy shit, this adds an extra layer to my novel and like this character. So he's really invested in the ins and out of who Tom was, what he was going through, what he was thinking at this moment in time. And Keith kind of does this like method acting type of situation where he really wants to walk in Tom's footsteps and find out just how he was feeling.
Okay.
So on August 7th, a week after these skeletal remains were found, Keith Reinhard tells some friends that he wants to hike up Pendleton Mountain.
Also, like, just what are the chances that he'd be found while he's there?
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
I know.
Synchronicity.
Synchronicity. So most people that Keith was kind of saying this to thought he was messing around. They were like, you don't hike. Why would you want to go up there? And he's like, no, I really want to go up there. And they're like, okay, like, go for it, you weirdo. And he asked people if they wanted to come with him. And they were like, no, we don't want to go up there. So he's like, well, I'm going to do it today. So it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon at this point, and hiking all the way up to this mountain to the tippy top would take about 6 hours. So by the time he gets up there, it's going to be nighttime. But he wasn't joking around. He was completely serious. And he tells his friend, Ted Parker, that he's going to make it to the top of the mountain. And if he doesn't come back by 10 p.m., call the rescue. And he kind of said that with like a laugh. So he headed up towards the mountain. And like I said, Keith was not an experienced hiker at all. There's also tons of wild animals up in these mountains. He didn't have any climbing equipment or even the proper attire with him. He was only wearing jeans, a flannel shirt, and some just regular tennis shoes.
Whenever I see like someone hiking or like working out in jeans, I'm like, what are you doing?
Right. It's like you weren't planning this. So
the pain.
What the fuck are you doing?
It's like when you see someone run past you and they're in running clothes and you're like, normal. When you see someone running past you in jeans, you're like, should I also be running?
That's happened to me many times before, actually.
Like, is there something coming my way from behind where you just were coming from?
Well, that's what you would think.
Yeah.
Why are you running in jeans?
Exactly.
You fucking freak. So the next morning comes and Keith is nowhere to be found. And almost immediately, the Colorado Alpine Rescue Team deploys in search of Keith Reinhard. And this search is huge. So there's about 200 or so people out there looking for this guy. They're combing through the mountaintops. and this search would continue for several days. They have volunteers, they have sniffer dogs, and they have helicopters. So while everyone is searching this mountain for Keith, the police go to his rental property and they go inside and they're just kind of looking around and they find the manuscript he was writing for his novel. So the last...
All work, no play makes Keith a dull boy.
Exactly right.
Wait, really?
I don't know.
Oh. Have you never seen The Shining?
I have.
Oh, all work, no play makes Jack a dull boy.
You know, I saw it, but I don't feel like I paid attention enough.
Oh, it's a good movie. You should watch it.
I should give it a rewatch, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the very last paragraph he wrote read, and I quote, "Guy Gypsum changed into some hiking boots and donned a heavy tunnel shirt. He understood it all now, and his motivations. Guy closed the door and then walked off towards the lush, shadowless Colorado forest above," end quote. Then they're kind of still sniffing around, and they see this other note on his computer. And this one read, and I quote, "Oh God, I want to wander. I want to wander till I die. With the mountains as my living room, my only roof, the sky. Keith Reinhard," end quote.
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful. However, after finding these two notes, the police were like, oh, hello, this guy went up to the mountains to complete suicide, clearly.
Guys, also, this might be true, but can I tell you, as someone who's a writer?
Tell me.
There are so many strange things, sad, happy, all sorts of weird things that I write down throughout the day.
Yeah.
Like, you think my Twitter drafts are bad?
Dude, I've seen your notes app.
My notes app, I literally will wake up in the middle of the night and, like, write the most insane thing you've ever read in your life and then just, like, go back to sleep. Forget I wrote it.
Right.
And it'll be right next to my bedside. So, like, if I went missing, someone would be like, this is the last thing she ever wrote.
They'd be like, she's a fucking freak.
And it would be, like, a Sylvia Plath, like, I'm gonna put my head in the oven type thing. Like, I don't know if non-writers also do this, but that is, like, I do that at least 3 or 4 times a week where I write something insane down, forget I wrote it down, and then, like, it's, like, under my pillow.
Yeah.
Like, crazy stuff all of the time.
Here's the thing. I am not a writer, so I don't fully grasp that. However, as somebody that studied film for a very long time, I can understand how that could be just an art, like a poem or,
yeah,
you know, just something that people do. I get that.
Yeah,
so
like
never...
neither of those things to me read as suicidal.
No, me either.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But the police here were like, yeah, that's what happened, clearly. Look at what he's writing, you know? So then on August 11th, a Cessna plane that was part of the search team crashed while looking for Keith. And the pilot, Terry Leedens, died on impact.
Oh, wow. That's terrible.
So then on August 14th, the search was completely called off and Keith was never found. And this was the first time in 30 years that the Alpine Rescue Team couldn't find a person they were searching for. And I just thought that was so weird. Like, every single person that has gone missing in the Rocky Mountains or whatever is in Colorado, they have found.
Yeah.
Except for Keith Reinhard. They could not find anything about
this guy.
And
he was not accomplished. Like, he's not going to be out on a super hard hike somewhere
right. Weird.
He probably wouldn't have even left the trail.
So what happened to Keith Reinhard? Let's talk about it. So obviously, like I mentioned, the police found this note on his computer and just assumed that this was a suicide, just like Tom Young, who they also ruled a suicide. And to coincide with this, people also could have been, like, people also thought that he might have staged this disappearance like it was a suicide, but he really went to start a life somewhere else. I know.
I hate that one because no one is that fucking good. No one's that fucking slick.
I agree with you. And we'll talk about why people think that in a second. So first, there were some strange things in this case that would make you think maybe there were some other things going on. For starters, if he did go up the mountain to complete suicide and off himself, why would his body not have been found?
Yeah.
Right? That's the first problem. They've never had a problem locating anyone else that disappeared in 30 years. And for some reason, you can't find someone's body or anything about this guy. And yeah. You think that he went up there to complete suicide?
Who wasn't even an experienced hiker. He's not going to be getting far in jeans.
Come on. Now, the second problem with this is that Keith had only taken a 3-month leave of absence from his job. And a week before he disappeared, he sent an email to his old boss at the Daily Herald asking that when he comes back, if he could cover the Chicago Bulls basketball team. A week before he disappeared.
So clearly he was trying to make plans for when he got back.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And on top of that, his wife, Carolyn, had been planning to visit the following week. Like, she already had her flight booked. She already they already had this whole plan. So why would he make all these plans and be trying to write this novel and have his job lined up and all this stuff if he either wanted to unalive himself or disappear?
Yeah, and it seemed like he was making progress on the novel, too.
Yeah. So Carolyn Reidhard also disagrees with either of these theories, and she has stated, and I quote, "I don't think that Keith would be the type of person to walk away from his whole entire life and leave it behind him. He loved the people in his life. He loved keeping in touch with them, and I don't think he could have left them all behind," end quote. Once again, I do believe that you can't fully know what someone's going through no matter what.
Of course, people will always surprise you.
So another thing that came up when people started talking about the possibility of him purposely staging this to start a new life.
Yeah.
Was the night before his disappearance on August 6th, Keith attended a party that was held at Ted Parker's building, which is called the KP building, where he was allegedly seen speaking with this woman all night long. Her name was Greta, and she was from Denver. And no one knew who this woman was, but they were just seen kind of like talking the whole night and in the corner and whatever. So people were speculating.
Flirting or whatever.
Flirting, yeah. So people were speculating that this woman could have been his love interest. He ran off with her. But I could not find a single thing where police or anyone found this woman and spoke to her.
I was going to say, is Retta missing? Like, that would
That's the hardest part. So it's like nothing has ever come from this theory because no one has ever spoken to this girl. So
yeah.
I have no idea. It probably was just some random chick.
Tenuous at best.
So another theory is that this was a complete accident. Keith did want to get more in the mindset of Tom for his novel, so he did go to the mountains to try to feel more connected to him. And this town was a huge mining town. So there's all these...
Classic Colorado.
Yeah, classic Colorado, classic ghost town, right? Especially in Colorado. So there's mines all over the place. So it's possible that maybe while he was walking, he slipped and fell into a mine shaft somewhere, possibly not even on the mountain, on the way.
Also feel like, how are we just allowed to have these fucking mine shafts like open willy-nilly?
Yeah, I don't understand.
That does not seem like that should be a thing that we allowed to like happen.
Well, especially when we tell stories from places like this, because this is a small town in Colorado. You've told stories of ghost towns, Cripple Creek in Colorado. It's like, these things only happen in these kind of towns, you know? And it's just, why are we not going there and maybe patching them up?
We should maybe patch them up.
We should probably patch them up.
Put a little patch on every once in a while.
So someone doesn't fall into an abandoned mine shaft.
How much money do we spend on the military year again?
That's what I'm saying.
Hey, Siri.
Siri, go patch up the mine shafts.
Hey, Siri. How much money do we spend on the military every year in the United States?
Our co-host.
Here's an answer from Wikipedia. The military budget of the United
States. $639 billion a year. How about we take like $2 billion of that and patch up some holes?
Something tells me you could patch up a few holes. So it's like, is it possible that he was walking to the mountain and fell in a fucking mine shaft and then no one found him because they were only looking up at the top of the mountain and he was not even on the mountain at this point when he fell in?
Do you want to hear my theory?
Yeah.
Do you have more theories?
I have more theories, but I'd love to hear yours.
I guarantee you it's one of yours.
Okay.
He was asking too many questions, and whoever killed
yes.
Homeboy was like, fuck, this guy's asking all the locals that he's fucking up my story. He's got to go, too.
Of course that's a fucking theory. Hello?
I know. I'm just... I'm sorry.
No, I like it. Yes, obviously. Foul play, baby. So, in Tom Young's case, he did purchase a gun, like I said, 4 days before he went missing. However, it is believed that the bullet found by the body that he was shot with... Mm-hmm. was either never tested by ballistics to see if it was the same, or it was tested and it turned out to not be connected to the gun. Those are two differing reports. I don't know which one is true.
Oh, and because it wasn't connected, they were like, we're just going to forget about that part exactly. because it'll fuck with our theory that it was a suicide.
Right. And I also read on one website, I think it was Strange Outdoors, that... there was a tarp found on Tom's body as if someone was trying to cover him up. But nobody else talks about that.
Hmm.
So I don't know how accurate that is, but that was definitely mentioned.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then there's definitely foul play.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems like he came in, he was asking way too many questions.
So Keith Reinhardt's family also believes that is what happened. They absolutely do not believe that he would have taken his own life or tried to leave his life in any way. He was just not that sort of guy to them. So both his daughter and his son think, like you said, that maybe he found something while he was searching for answers about Tom Young, and the people that killed Tom also ended up killing Keith, or he saw something he wasn't supposed to see, maybe inside of that building, because Tom had the bookshop and then he rented
it
out.
Something.
Yeah, he saw something. So then I looked this up a little more, and according to an article on strangeoutdoors.com, a man named Mike Eccles wrote a book about the possibility of illegal nuclear dumping in Silver Plume, and that these trucks were allegedly carrying this illegal nuclear waste to dump in these abandoned mine shafts in the area. And apparently, Mike Eccles, when he found this out, told Tom Young about this.
Oh, okay.
So there's a theory that maybe someone was trying to stop Tom Young from exposing this illegal nuclear waste that was going on. And then, while researching Tom Young's disappearance, Keith ended up finding out about this. He also wanted to expose it in his book, and then... they were like, okay, we gotta stop you now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because he's literally writing a book about it.
Literally.
I think that makes sense.
No, that's a really good theory. And I think that's very, when I was looking at the Reddit threads and stuff, most people were kind of on board with that one.
Well, that, to bring it back to my case even, I was like, dang, I wish I could find more about these random two older ladies who got killed by anthrax.
Yeah.
With seemingly no connection, because it seems like maybe they could have done all this other spicy stuff to cover up the fact that they killed these other two ladies.
Yeah, so true.
But it's so hard to find anything about them because they were the off the radars one. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
they cover that shit up once again.
Yeah, so yeah. Like I definitely, yeah, that makes sense.
There is also a theory that Keith actually had gone up the mountain and purposely went missing just for publicity of his novel, or to, once again, you know...
and then accidentally gone missing for real?
Well, no. To, like, method act, to really feel what it was like to go missing, kind of. And then, while he was hiding up there during the search and rescue, the Cessna crashed, someone died, and he's like, oh my God, I caused a death, now I can't come out.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah,
and he was like, fuck, I'm not coming out, and... everyone's going to be like, look what you fucking did. Well, I mean, I also think this is a really stupid theory because once again.
Because you could still come out, even if you accidentally got lost on purpose, you could still come out and say it wasn't on purpose. How would people know?
And also, like, I think he would have contacted his family and somebody would have seen him come down the mountain.
How would he work? What would he be doing? I'm sorry.
How would he survive eat.
You have
drink.
To have money. You have to have an ID. You have to have, to get a fake ID even, you have to have money. Like, right. No, you can't.
And of course, there's the theories that he could have been attacked or eaten by a bear or a wild animal. There's the drinking the Kool-Aid type theories, abducted by a UFO or Bigfoot. You know, you have to always include those in a disappearance.
Well, because it could be anything. It
could be.
There's a certain point where it could be anything.
Yeah. And the only update on this case was that in 2021, two hikers were up on Pendleton Mountain shooting some footage for like a college film. Mm-hmm. And they ended up finding Keith Reinhardt's wallet.
Weird.
Yeah.
Just the wallet?
Just the wallet.
Yeah, that's
which
suspicious.
Also coincides with the fact that he couldn't have... Where could he have gone without his shit?
And also, I'm sorry, like, if he was attacked by an animal, if he was stolen, if he was whatever, why would it just be the wallet? If he was attacked by an animal, there'd also be, like, pants and bones and shreds and all. Like, I'm sorry,
also,
no.
Like, that's, like, 30 years and you found the wallet?
Just the wallet?
Just the wallet.
Intact? Yeah, no way.
Yeah.
That's some shady shit. That's some shady
very
shit.
Very shady, yeah. So, yeah, that is the... unfortunate disappearance and death of Tom Young and the disappearance of Keith Reinhardt. There is a documentary called The Dark Side of the Mountain that I tried to watch, and I read a lot of their website, which they had some really good information. But they're apparently still in post-production, so I couldn't watch it. But hopefully that comes out soon, because they
will watch it.
Yeah, they do a deep dive into this case, and it sounds really interesting.
All right. I'll have to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. I mean, I know that case pretty well, and I definitely think, like, something shady was going on there, for sure.
No, absolutely.
For sure.
I agree.
All right. We are running a little long, but I think we have time. Oh, yeah. We're almost at 2 hours.
We haven't had a long episode in a while.
Yeah. But I think we have time for a listener story. What do you think?
I think so. Let's do it.
All right. So this one is from Corey.
Hi, Corey.
And Corey says, hello. I've been meaning to sit down and type this out for a while. I thought you guys would enjoy it. It's the story of the time that I saw a Bigfoot. Oh,
yes.
My God. Fucking finally. Like, I love your guys' ghost stories. Don't get me wrong. But, like, we never get cryptid stories.
Yeah.
I want a cryptid.
We love Bigfoot.
Also, if you're from the Appalachian Mountains, like, hit me up.
Okay. I know. This is your dream.
A little background, my parents used to go to a crazy amount of car shows when I was a kid all over the place, and pretty much always took my brother and I with. They used to be part of a classic car club. Ooh, that's fun.
Ooh.
Which we happened to be with when this story happened. We were leaving a show in Mount Vernon, Washington. I'm not sure exactly of the time, but it was really dark out, so it must have been kind of late, probably 8 or 9 p.m. Not AM. So we're in the back seat of the car, and we're in line of probably 20 or so other cars on this 2-lane highway. There's no street lights down this stretch of highway, so the only illumination was our car's headlights and a couple of cars in front of us. One of the drivers had one of those big handheld spotlights, and they were shining back and forth in the dark woods on the other sides of the highway. Suspicious immediately, right?
I was going to say, where are we in this story?
Washington.
Oh, okay.
We had been cruising along for a few pretty uneventful miles when the left side of the road from the trees out steps a Bigfoot.
Hell no.
Right into the spotlight. This next part happened so fast, it almost seemed unreal. It only took 4 steps. The first was out into the trees and into the light. The second was onto the road and right in between the moving cars. And the third was off the road. And the fourth was right back into the woods on the other side. And mind you, none of the cars had a chance to even stop or slow down while all of this was happening. Holy moly. We still talk about it to this day. It was so surreal. I've only told about a handful of people it ever happened, because aside from a few people who saw it, I don't think anyone else would really believe it. I absolutely believe you immediately.
I mean, who else saw this? Your family was in the car.
And tons of people on the highway.
Yeah.
And apparently they all talk about it.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for taking the time to read this. You guys are going You guys are great and I love the show. I'm playing catch up on it. Maybe I'll get around to writing down my second and only other Bigfoot encounter soon.
Please.
Corey, please do this. I love Bigfoot.
I love Bigfoot. We did a whole Bigfoot episode.
That's so true. We love Bigfoot here. Please. Please send it to us. Also, I feel like if you had other people who see it.
No, there's no question.
Done and done. That was real.
No fucking questions
no
asked.
No fucking questions asked. I believe you 100%.
I absolutely believe
also,
you.
Also, Washington is like one of the biggest places where they see Bigfoots.
Yeah.
Besides like Northern California, which also makes sense.
It does. Lots of woods. That's what we need in this Bigfoot world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Don't let the government silence you, Corey.
Don't let them silence you, Corey.
Tell your story.
If your email bounces back, send it again.
That's right.
But thank you guys so much for listening. If you have a story you would like to tell us, especially a Bigfoot story, I love Bigfoot stories.
Or any cryptid.
Yeah. Even if it's like your cousin's, uncle's, brother's story, I don't care. If they give you permission to send it, send it. But thank you guys so much for listening. You can do that at dtkpod.com/contact. You can also find our merch and all of that other good stuff under dtkpod.com/support. But most importantly, make sure you keep your front door locked.
Make sure you keep your mind open.
And keep drinking the Kool-Aid.
You clicked record, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I had this like weird fear. I was like, I didn't see you click record.
I'm literally Well, that was not a convincing yeah to an are you ready?
Yeah.
There we go. Now we're talking. All right. I don't know why. I just feel like the mall is somewhere to get kicked out of.
Yeah, but you don't go there, so it doesn't matter.
That's so true.
So you could literally wear it.
I don't even leave the house that much.
You really don't.
You just have yours so like silly. So
what do you mean silly?
No, like I want it. It's like whimsical. I don't mean that as an insult. You have your mic so like whimsical. Mine's so. My mic is way less. There you go. That seems more whimsical.
That's whimsical. There you go. Yeah.